afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, January 4th, 2021. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, 2022.
There you go. Happy New Year.
Oh, my. Well, I'm working on the accounting program, and it's still showing 2021, so I had 2021 on the brain, so.
Yeah. Why update when you can, you know, still live in the glorious past, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, 2021 was a good year.
Oh, man. It was a crazy year.
So.
But you know what? It's Happy National Spaghetti Day, too, today.
It's what?
National Spaghetti Day, so you know what you should be having for dinner. But it's also, more importantly, it's National Trivia Day.
National Trivia Day?
So let me ask you a trivia question.
Okay.
What was the price of gold when it was first followed in 1792?
Do you want the cents, or just do you want me to round it out?
No, I don't care.
Well, that's easy, Dave.
What?
I should know this, because then I'm going to have a trivia question for you, too.
Oh, gosh, that's scary.
It was $19.40.
That's...
And, okay, but what was the high in the next few years? How high did it go?
I'm going to say $22 and change.
All right. All right. Good deal.
Well, you know, it did go as high as 2216, and then it fell back again to 1939 in 1817, where it would hold steady for another 17 years when it started going back up into the low 20s. And, of course, it would double by the end of the Civil War, before settling back to $20.67 till it hit the $30 level in 1933, I think it is. And, of course, thanks to the Federal Reserve, their decisions and the decline in the U.S. dollar and the loss of purchasing power since then, it's been gradually rising ever since. We're going to talk more about that in today's last segment today.
All right. Good deal. And, you know, the funny thing about it is I believe gold's rise in 1933 didn't happen until after they confiscated gold. And then it increased.
Oh, there you go.
So, important. You know, the people who stood in line and got paid for it, they, you know, didn't get the benefits of the Federal Reserve's increased price of gold after they took it from the folks. So.
Important piece of trivia.
Yes. So once again, the government was on our side, right, folks? Oh, brother. Well, let's go ahead and see what gold did today. And it was a weird day for gold. I mean, it popped $12, $13, stayed there, didn't fluctuate up and down, up and down. It went up, stayed there at $1,815. Silver was up 16 cents, so it pumped it up back to $23.14. Platinum was up $17 at $981, and palladium was up 57 at $1,968. The USDX today was also stronger, just a little by 0.07 at 96.30. Crude oil was up almost a buck at 77, just a little over 77. Paper markets today, I don't know how long Santa Claus is going to be hanging out for the Dow, but that was up another 214 points at 36,799. But the S&P and NASDAQ didn't do as well. Basically, the S&P was flat, down 3 points at 47.93, but the NASDAQ was down a little bit more than that, 210 points at 15,622. Asia was mixed. Europe was positive across the board, and the 10-year yield continues to climb 1.649 up again for this day. So, we'll see what else is going on in the markets. I don't know. For some reason, it just seems like a weird start to this year. It's only been, 2 days, but it just seems strange. Maybe it was the big storm that went up and all those poor people stranded on I-95 for hours and hours, 12, 13, 20 hours.
Crazy.
It is crazy. It is crazy. But it's interesting. Workers continue to quit their jobs. Again, a record number in November. But the total employment openings pulled back a little bit. The so-called quit rate surged to over 4.5 million for the month. Now we're talking about November. Now this is according to the department's job openings and labor turnover survey. It's JOLTS. That represented a 9% increase from October and broke September's high water mark of 4.36 million. And I don't get it, Dave. Why people are quitting their jobs. I just don't get it. Why people just quit unless they're getting enough. How are they getting enough money? Are they actually, I guess, wouldn't we see it in the jobs reports at the end of this week?
Well, that certainly could explain some. I mean, it certainly explain how many people are working and found jobs, but still doesn't explain why so many have been quitting. Although, there's some speculation and there's some anecdotal evidence, out there that, there are these same factors that we've been hearing about since the fall, whether it's a fear of returning to work or feeling they have more leverage now as an employee, as a worker in terms of salary and benefits. And I'm sure there are, a myriad of other factors that are playing in there, large and small, too. But this is one of the strongest mixed signals, some people are saying, that are out there in these economic financial metrics. So, what I would say, your guess or thoughts are probably as good as anyone else's, Melody. My guess is that they're better than most.
Well, the thing of it is, on the jobs report comes out on Friday, if it has a huge increase, would that reflect some of these people that resigned in November that got new jobs?
Well, that's a good question. I wish I knew the answer to that. I'm sure there'll be some speculation that a high number, over 400,000, would help to explain a chunk of that number. But again, I'm not sure that the government puts two and two together from the JOLTS report, say, to the monthly jobs report. So,
well, yeah, they wouldn't, because they want to take the credit that, the economy is doing great and they're doing such a great job that all these people are getting jobs, but they're not new jobs. They're just changing. I don't know.
Yep. But, that's true. It's where we live in very interesting times. And it takes questions like yours and some serious analysis to try and get to the bottom of it. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, and in terms of the basis for future policy, certainly the Federal Reserve, out to contain inflation, right after they were on a roll to bring unemployment down employment up to full or maximum employment, these kinds of questions and the answers to them are important.
Was there anything else interesting in that report, Dave?
The main thing I'd say is that this comment by economist Bob Frick at the Navy Federal Credit Union, who we quote in these reports and articles, mentions that this so-called Great Resignation shows no sign of abating. And that, I think, is an important point that he, among others, certainly expect that to continue. I guess we're going to have to wait and see over perhaps the next, 6 months at a minimum to see where JOLTS stands then compared to jobs report and other important employment like labor force participation. Then I think, we can make some better informed pronouncements or judgments.
Well, the growth in U.S. manufacturing, that slowed last month to an 11-month low. Still combating, these companies are still combating their supply chain problems. The Institute for Supply Management, that's a trade group of purchasing managers, reported today that its index of manufacturing activity fell to a reading of 58.7, 2.4 percentage points below the November reading that was at 61.1. Any number above 50 still does indicate growth, and which has recorded 19 straight months of growth of going back to the spring of 2020, after everybody started to go back to work and so forth after the big lockdown. So,
yeah. That reading is lowest since matching 58.7 in January of last year. They say reflecting a decline in both new orders and in production, Melody. Economist Andrew Hunter at Capital Economics said that the surge in the virus variants, could deal a more significant blow to manufacturing output if significant numbers of workers are forced to stay at home once again. What do you think? Are we headed for another widespread shutdown this winter?
No, I don't think so. No.
Good.
No, they can't shut it down. They know better. And I think that's why you're already seeing positive headlines coming out of Europe and, so forth. And then, you could almost read their playbook, but there's still some open slots at the Fed. I don't think that's going to matter anything. I don't think it's going to change anything with these new faces at the Fed, Dave. You still got Powell that's going to be in there leading everything. So I'm not quite sure what these new voices will really make a difference. There's three open slots at the Federal Reserve, plus openings for permanent heads at two regional banks. They will all likely be filled this year, unless there's a reason why there's so many open seats. Is there a reason behind it, or is it just their term is up?
No, the term is up. In the case of the two regional Fed presidents, they resigned under pressure because of recent trading scandals at Boston and Dallas. You've got these media pundits who think they know more than anybody else in most cases. And some, I think, they're just making these pronouncements because they can. They got to fill the 24-hour airwaves. But I think they're making a big mistake. While one or two of these new faces could be agitators, so to speak. I mean, the thing to remember is that, well, not all of them are going to have a vote in the Federal Open Market Committee. That's done on a rotating basis, and there's several governors who don't have votes. So, I mean, they're still able to participate in the periodic meeting, the policy meetings, and they're when it comes to these the data scattergrams, you know, they participate in that too. So it could change a little bit of, you know, some of the forecasts we see, but what are forecasts good for anyway? I mean, they're so typically inaccurate, and they so typically change from month to month, if not, you know, week to week, and in some cases, day to day.
So, best thing they could do is get rid of the Fed. Close the doors. Get rid of them all. You know, we wouldn't have this amount of debt if it wasn't for the Fed. We wouldn't have this debt.
You know, I don't see any. I agree with you. I don't see any major change in what the Fed has, you know, most recently announced. I don't think they're going to speed up or slow down necessarily their purchase of government bonds. I don't know. I don't think there's enough of dissent among the voting members that could really impact their decisions with interest rates when they come sometime this year. So, ho-hum.
Yeah, and, you know, and again, you know, their job used to be to keep full employment, but now their job is just to keep it from crashing, keep our system from crashing. But they don't say that.
Now with this, well, I'm not even going to go there. Never mind.
Okay. Vehicle sales, that rebounded in 2021 slightly. But still, forecasters are expecting them to be more than 2 million below the years before the pandemic. And you know what's funny? I mean, these are some bad numbers. Even though they rebounded and so forth, these are still bad numbers. If we would have had these bad numbers before the pandemic, the world would have fallen apart. Oh, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Back, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And yeah, we got a little bit of new music and some of my favorite songs. So I hope you enjoy them too. And, you know, heading into the break, we were talking about, you know, we can move on from this about the vehicles rebound, even with the chip shortages. Prices continue to remain higher. I don't know if there's anything else we need to add to that, Dave. Any change in direction as far as the chips and so forth, or...
Well, I mean, Cox is predicting that new vehicle sales here in the U.S. will increase by about a million this year to around 16 million, but it's still lower. That's still lower than before the pandemic began. So with this pent-up demand, increased demand, I mean, it's amazing that the average new vehicle price, Melody, rose to over $45,000 by the end of the year, 20% higher than a year ago. First time it's been above $45,000.
Wow.
My wife commented to me earlier today that she remembers her first new Volkswagen Beetle, $3,000, I think. When was that? That must have been, gosh, the 70s?
Probably.
Anyway.
Probably, yeah.
Then just the only other big thing, and we don't have to spend any time on it, I just was just an eye-opener, I guess you could call it, that for the first time, Toyota is expected to outsell General Motors in the U.S. That to me, is amazing, given that long history and tradition in this country. And again, they're attributing it to GM being hit harder by the chip shortage, especially earlier this year, and Toyota apparently having a better distribution system. So
well,
who knows? But it's not particularly significant news. It's just it's symbolic, I guess.
It is. It's a sign of the times, and it's a sign of what happened here. I mean, that is a sad stat. And I don't care if it's in reference to the chip shortage or not. If we were making chips in this country, gee, we wouldn't have had that problem.
Yeah, we wouldn't be talking about this, at least in this context.
But it seems like everything has changed. What? They never thought there'd be shortages and issued, supply chain disruptions ever in the future. I mean, nah. And
we don't have to do it anymore, Melody. I mean, we got all these workers, cheap labor in other countries. They can make them. We'll just buy them more cheaply than if we had manufactured them here in this country.
Yes, and then our vehicles still go higher and higher and higher.
Yeah,
I don't know what that price is in comparison to a Toyota with the U.S. vehicles compared to Toyotas. They're probably the same. But, well, one thing that we know that had a interesting year was gold. And I go over these numbers periodically, but it's always nice to start out at the beginning of the year. And, you know, gold, you know, everybody talks about gold's uninspiring performance in 2021, but yet it wasn't a bad year for gold. You know,
Physical gold especially.
Pardon?
Physical gold especially.
Right, but I mean, even the price of gold. I mean, we still had a nice trend working. And that's what, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It was a good year for both gold and silver. We have some updated sales data that was released by the U.S. Mint this week, showing that gold hit its highest levels last year since 2009. The Mint said that it sold over 1.25 million ounces of gold in various denominations of the American Gold Eagle coins. And that's up more than 48% from 2020. Everybody said, well, why are the prices lower? Why is gold lower? According to the sales data, the Mint's busiest month last year was in January when it sold 220,000 ounces of gold. Price of gold in January last year was $1,900. People buy high. Another memorial month for the Mint included June when it sold 182,000 gold ounces. And that came... gold prices, and that came after gold price did drop that time more than $100 in the month. And of course, June was also when we had the changeover of the new design.
So
and that's, and I think also in the beginning for the silver anyway, we had a lot of people buying for the new designs, you know, the type ones and the type twos. The next month was August. It was a great month for the Mint. Sold 136,000 ounces of gold. And prices dropped more than 4%, falling to a new low for the year. However, you know, hey, people were smart. They bought on the dip. We also saw gold in October and November. Also saw strong gold prices. And so the physical demand for gold is continuing to be strong. And for all the fundamentals that gold provides, Dave.
Yeah, I Michael Fulgens, not sure how to pronounce his
Fulgens.
Last name. Fulgens.
Fulgens, yeah.
He was named the 2021 American Numismatic Association Dealer of the Year. Obviously, they forgot about Melody. But said that the recent volatility. Said that the recent volatility in the Dow and Russell 2000 indexes are a reminder that gold is the only proven stable form of money, and has been for thousands of years. Interestingly, went on to say, with rising federal spending and deficits, plus rising inflation and global uncertainty. He predicts that gold prices will return to over $2,000 this year, with silver going up over $27 per ounce. Speaking of which, Mint sold 28.3 million ounces of silver in 2021. You know, that was down about 6% from more than 30 million ounces sold the prior year. Silver demand was particularly strong in the first quarter last year. Remember the market being swept up in the social media meme stock craze, where investors, you know, tried through Facebook and other Twitter to create a short squeeze in the silver market, ultimately failing. Now, interestingly, the Mint also sold 75,000 ounces of platinum coins last year. That's up 32% from the previous year. And that's the highest level of demand since 1998. Platinum, as you know, is a critical metal used to separate hydrogen and oxygen in water. Hydrogen is then used to generate power. And, of course, platinum is also used in fuel cells to power vehicles. And last but not least, for the first time since 2017, the mint sold palladium coins, a total of about 8,700 ounces.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, platinum is certainly at a low price compared to where it's always been historically. I mean, it always sold for more than gold, and it took a big hit. Palladium kind of took over that role, and it has been interesting. I mean, we've seen palladium sell, you know, close to 3,000, 2,800, somewhere around that level. And I don't know why anybody would be buying it in 2021. It's one of those prices where it's, you know, you buy high. I mean, if you want a different metal than gold or silver, platinum is the one you'd want to purchase. You always want to buy the dog, mm-hmm. you know, and that's, you know, because we know it trades for higher. Always has, and it will. It'll bounce back. I was always amazed at the price of palladium, of seeing it run, and it ran alongside of rhodium. Palladium and rhodium kind of ran side by side.
Oh, wow, really?
So I don't know. Only rhodium traded at, what, 15,000 or something like that, but they both started to go up together at the same time. So, but I also saw rhodium the last time back in the mid, that was probably 2006, 2007. Rhodium ran to 10,000, then it dropped back down to 500. So that's a little volatility for you. And, you know, I saw this yesterday, Dave, and I thought to myself, is any company really worth $3 trillion in market caps? But this is thanks to buybacks. And, you know, again, all you hear about is Apple's hitting $3 trillion. Capped off a stunning rise yesterday, became the first company to reach $3 trillion in market cap before closing the day just shy of the mark. In recent years, Apple has been the biggest repurchaser of its own shares of stock. Apple spent over $85 billion to repurchase shares and $14.5 billion on dividends in the fiscal 2021, which ended September 30th. So, as you know, share buybacks boosts a company's stock price by reducing the supply of shares in the market, effectively returning the money to investors. In addition, reduced share counts, increasing earnings per share. You know, so is it worth $3 trillion? Dave?
Well, no, it's crazy.
It is crazy.
It's surreal. I mean, when Apple hit the $1 trillion mark, yeah, it was just 3 years ago, and I remember that announcement.
Yep,
its stock is up 252% since then, but that's compared with a market cap increase of only 200%. The difference, the result of the buybacks, which has reduced the company's share count from about 19 billion at the end of 2018 to about 16 billion now. So, it's crazy. I mean, Apple, as of October, Apple had 66 billion in net cash. According to its CFO, anyway. That's down from 163 billion. In net cash when the latest buyback decision was announced. Now, analysts expect the company to announce another $90 billion in buybacks and raise its dividend by another 10% this year. It's certainly good. I don't know if King is the right right word for this, but certainly it's the ridiculous. Big cheese. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, here's something else that's crazy. China denies expanding nuclear arms arsenal. Yeah, a senior Chinese arms control official is denying his government is rapidly expanding its nuclear arsenal, although we are doing what we have to do to modernize its nuclear forces.
Modernize.
Let's replace expanding with modernize. Fu Gong, who heads up the China's Foreign Ministry Arms Control Department, said China is working to ensure its nuclear deterrence meets the minimum level necessary for national defense. On the assertions made by the U.S. officials that China is expanding dramatically its nuclear capabilities, first, let me say that this is untrue, he said. And, of course, his briefing was held a day after China, the U.S., Russia, U.K., and France issued a joint statement on preventing nuclear war or an arms race. That's kind of interesting that they made a joint statement on preventing a nuclear war. I wonder what all the little details around that are. The statement was supposed to be timed to start of the global conference on disarmament at the UN. Anyway, they could have more than 1,000 warheads by 2030. 1,000 warheads by 2030. The U.S. has 3,700 nuclear weapons. So, should we be concerned, Dave?
I think, any time you have more nuclear weapons or so many nuclear weapons that they could destroy Earth 10 times over. There's cause for some level of concern. I mean, I guess on the one hand, the good news is that they have acted as a deterrent over the decades. As the so-called mutually assured destruction, as the pundits called it back then. But there's the fact that there's so much of it and the unused, I mean, we used to have 10,000 nuclear weapons and, all of those now, are just, they've been disassembled, but the spent nuclear fuel, let's hope that doesn't get into the wrong hands.
Well, I hear the music. We'll head into our last break, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk truthandtalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Where would we be now? Well, we're, or I should say, you're at Financial Survival. That's what you're listening to anyway. Welcome back. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of clients this final segment. Call her at toll-free at 800-375-4188. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, or you can read them on our Facebook page at dgscoins. That's the at sign, dgscoins, one word. Now, this week's edition contains a review of the precious metal and other major markets over the two-week holiday season, as well as Doug Nolan's review of the major events that shaped 2021. A thorough analysis, indeed. I have an article in there called Fundamentals of Gold and Silver Still Strong as New Year Begins. Well, as we now know, gold and silver prices fell 3.5% and 11.5% respectively last year, and started the first official trading day of 22 yesterday, down another maybe 2-ish percent. Nevertheless, they're still a solid and perhaps the best place to have your savings, especially for the long run. Why? Well, because the fundamentals of gold and silver remain strong. As we embark on another year of work, play, and yes, investing for our future. The proof, as they say, is in the fundamentals. Now, one definition of fundamental is a central or primary rule or principle that something is based on. As Kelsey Williams has observed, gold and silver each has one basic fundamental. Gold is real money, and silver is an industrial commodity. Now, both of them have a secondary use that's similar to the primary fundamental of the other metal. That is, gold and is first and foremost real money, but it also has industrial applications. Silver's primarily an industrial commodity, but has a secondary use as money. The basic value of either gold or silver stems from its primary fundamental. This means that gold derives most of its value from its role as real money, while silver's basic value stems from its use in industry. And here's the thing. The primary fundamental for each metal will always be the same. That is, primary demand for gold will always be for its use as money, and that value will always exceed any secondary applications in industry by a wide margin. Silver, similar, but, you know, the opposite from gold. That is, it will always be valued primarily for its use in industry, with its use as money being a distant second. Now, here's another relevant definition, investment. Something that's worth buying because it may be profitable or useful in the future. Williams asks, well, why do people invest in stocks, for example? His answer, because companies provide goods and services of a productive nature, presumably, that add value to our economy today and in the future. Over longer periods of time, it becomes value added, which means that there's profit potential without regard to price increases or bargain sales. Now, these explanations and their fundamentals are independent of the measure of value used to quote their price. For example, whether we measure the price of butter or, say, Apple stock, we recently talked about, in dollars, or other currencies, beads, grains, or gold, doesn't affect the value of the butter or the stock. Instead, Williams rightly argues, the value comes from the use and consumption, or the added convenience, efficiency, comfort, satisfaction, and complementary benefits to our standard of living. So the price of anything is an implied measure of its value. But then you have to ask, value to whom? If the finest antique vases that money can buy is of no interest to me because I don't collect vases, well, then that product has no value to me at any price, right? I mean, what about gold? There's no shortage of people or corporations or pension funds that see gold as an investment, even if it's just as a hedge against inflation, for example. So, can we apply the definition of investment to gold? That is, could it be profitable or useful in the future? And if gold's an investment, what's its value? Can we consume it like butter? Well, no. Does its use in jewelry indicate its value? Yes, but only on a remote secondary basis. Remember, gold's primary value is in its use as money. As such, it's not an investment. It's real money because it satisfies the three basic properties necessary for something to be money. It's a measure of value, it's a medium of exchange, and it's a store of value. And for anything to be money, it must have all three of the foregoing characteristics. And throughout roughly 5,000 years of recorded history, gold stands alone in that sense. The U.S. dollar and other paper currencies aren't real money because they're not stores of value. They're simply replacements or proxies for real money. I mean, think about that. So if gold does have value, do we invest in it because it may be profitable or useful in the future? Well, I guess you got to say possibly because, you know, millions of people do. But why? Gold isn't consumable. We don't eat it or otherwise use it up, and there's no value added, as in the case of companies that produce goods and services, which over time add benefits to our standard of living. So why then? Why buy or invest in gold? Most people invest in something because they expect or hope the price will go up. Hence, they'll make a profit. Remember that an investment is something that's worth buying because it may be profitable in the future. But what makes something potentially profitable in the future? We understand the fundamentals that affect various investments in, say, stocks and real estate. Generally, a reasonable investor can believe that those fundamentals may eventually lead to expected profits. If gold is an investment, then it ought to respond similarly, right? Oh, what then are those fundamentals? Well, here are the major driving factors that most people consider to be fundamentals affecting the price of gold: interest rates, stock market trends, economic conditions, social unrest, political turmoil, currency exchange rates, ups and downs, and yes, war, military conflict. But it turns out that none of those things are fundamental factors relative to the price of gold. Yes, none. As Williams points out, only one factor is highly correlated, much less well, directly related to gold's price direction. And that's the value of the U.S. dollar. Gold's generally priced in U.S. dollars, and trades in gold are settled in U.S. dollars because of the dominance of the dollar and its role as the world's reserve currency. Gold is original money. It was money before paper currencies were literally rolled out. The U.S. dollar and all paper currencies are substitutes for this original money, gold. And as we know, all governments regularly inflate and devalue, even destroy their own currencies. Over the past century, the U.S. dollar has lost more than 98% of its value. That is, its purchasing power. And over the same period, the price of gold has increased nearly 60-fold, or 5,900%. In other words, higher gold prices over time are a direct reflection of a weakened and weakening U.S. dollar. The huge increase in the price of gold doesn't represent an increase in its value. Gold's value doesn't change. It's constant. The value of 1 ounce of gold today in terms of its purchasing power is close to what it was 100 years ago. In fact, it's basically the same it was a millennium ago. Over the last century, there have been five major turning points for gold's price. All of them, 1933, 1971, 1980, 2001, and 2011, coincided with changes in the direction of the relative value of the U.S. dollar. And again, because gold is priced in U.S. dollar, and the U.S. dollar is a long-term and it is in a long-term state of decline, the price of gold in U.S. dollars will continue to rise over time. So at the end of the day, what really matters is what you can buy with your dollars, which over time is less and less and less. Gold's long-term price isn't determined by rising or falling interest rates, multiple geopolitical events, domestic political volatility, or industrial demand even. The only thing to know to appreciate gold for what it really is to understand what's going on with the dollar. When gold was in everyday use as money, it was the measure of value that was used to price the goods and services that people valued. Thus, people paid for flour, bacon, beans, haircuts with fractional amounts of gold, fractional units of currency that was convertible to gold. Now, today we find ourselves trying to price real money, gold, with money proxies, paper currencies, that have no real value. So let's end how we started, by repeating that gold and silver are a solid, probably the best place to park your savings, especially for the long run. More importantly, their prices are poised for a consistent run upwards, thanks to a continually failing U.S. dollar resulting from and in a perpetual loss in purchasing power. Now, Friday's What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog will highlight 10 major economic and geopolitical factors that will drive the day-to-day fluctuations in our favorite precious metals this year, whether on their own or in some combination with one another. These factors will weigh heavily on the daily price changes of gold and silver throughout 2022. But more than anything, pay closest attention to the U.S. dollar. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. More on this on Friday's blog. All right, let's end today's program with a look at inflation and corporate monopolies. So here's a question. Do monopolies cause inflation? Now, implicit in that is another question. Does cracking down on monopolies cause inflation to decline? Well, both are the claim of the Biden administration anyway. Frankly, it's difficult to find good faith arguments on either side of this debate, but one thing is clear. The federal government, the Biden administration, is currently being broadly blamed for rapidly rising prices. So if the rate of inflation should start to decline for any reason, as many expect it will as soon as this year, well, then surely Biden will claim credit. White House claims that rising meat prices have been due to four monopolists in the meat processing industry abusing their 85% share of the market. Even NYU professor Marion Nestle claimed last week their goal is to control the market so they can control the price. On the other side of that coin, the North American Meat Institute says that the White House doesn't understand agricultural economics. They think they're backed up by a recent Twitter thread from Harvard economist and former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, who claims that increases in demand won't create higher inflation in monopolistic industries than in competitive ones. Well, whether monopolies cause inflation or not, we know that there will always be the blame game in Washington. Unfortunately, both sides of these attacks are stronger on political expedience than they are with respect to a solution to what ails us. That's all the time we have for today's show. I'll be back Thursday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch. Thanks to Todd and for you to tuning in. Bye-bye.